Welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Danica Halen and Ryan Elke in the Motor City Studio. Anthony Bellino coming from the Radio Bunker. Joining us on the horn right now, he covers the Michigan Wolverines for 24/7 Sports. Our good buddy Zach Shaw. Zach, my man, first and foremost, thank you for taking the time to join us today. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for having me. I think this is my first time on the X's and Bros show. So congrats on the show and great to be here.
Well, thanks very much, man. I appreciate it. I think this is the first time we've touched base here. So this is good. All things are good. Everything is good until Michigan runs into the Illinois Fighting Illini, who came with a bone to pick for the Wolverines on Tuesday night. And they just, I mean, we've been talking about it, of course, ad nauseum, but they just absolutely blitzed Michigan and there was nothing that Michigan could do. And in that ball game, Isaiah Livers said it best. He said, hey, they punched us and that was that. Like, and it always felt like Michigan was playing from behind. Even when the game was tied at 10s, it felt like, oh, this is going to be a struggle tonight.
Yeah, it really, and you were there as well. I mean, just the vibe from Illinois' bench. I mean, they had trainers streaming onto the court after like a routine layup, you know, screaming and chanting, you know, the chop wood was going on all night. And really, it was like as soon as Illinois scored, because they only scored 2 points in the first like 5 minutes, as soon as they got to 0.7, I was like, I don't think Michigan's winning this game. Just the energy. And then the other thing is they had some players play better than they usually do. And that's something that quietly hasn't happened to Michigan very much. It's usually the other way around. It's Shondi Brown going off for 15, against Ohio State. It's Mike Smith going off for 14 against Indiana. It's more Michigan that has players that just have nights where everything clicks. And so, you know, offensively, I mean, Trent Frazier's not going to score 22 points the next time these two teams play. And you know, Andre Curbelo, I think he's a really good candidate for Sixth Man of the Year, but he's not going to score 17 all the time. You know, clearly they had some guys playing out of their shoes. I don't know if they were – I mean, obviously, I'm sure you guys have talked about the Illinois kind of the chip on their shoulder about the whole Big Ten championship and Michigan, quote-unquote, ducking that game on February 11th. So, I mean, they played like they wanted to destroy Michigan. And Michigan played like – well, they played with energy. I don't think they like didn't want to win, but it didn't match Illinois' tenacity. And sometimes that just happens. I mean, Michigan's had a few revenge games over the years, including one against Illinois where, I mean, they were just – there was no chance anybody was going to beat them on that day. And so there's that. And then there's also the schematic part. And I think that's the part, you know, if you're thinking about how concerning is a 30-point loss. On the surface, not really. Illinois' really good. Michigan's beaten a lot of really good teams. I think they've proven what they can be. But the schematic stuff, you start to wonder, okay, did that reveal a blueprint? Is that something Michigan State can try to replicate or an NCAA tournament team can try to replicate? I mean, just the way, the way that they were pushing Michigan out of their spots. You know, the corner threes weren't open. The threes off ball screens weren't open. I mean, a lot of the stuff that Michigan's used to scoring on weren't there. That's why out of the 49 shots that they attempted or 47 shots they attempted, 30 were in the mid-range. I mean, you look at Michigan's shot chart all year, only about 1 in 6 of their shots are coming in the mid-range usually. Actually, 2 in 6, excuse me. But, you know, it's not a high percentage, and they don't make very many of them. And so that was a huge part of it. And then, of course, Michigan's defense, I actually thought did all right. There was a lot of late shot clock stuff, some three-pointers, step-back threes in traffic that, frankly, I don't think Michigan can feel bad about. You know, Adam Miller, I think, made a step back three with the shot clock expiring. It was like, okay, you know, that was like a 28 footer. You let him take that shot. But some of the other stuff, like blowing by Michigan's guards, I think big men had a tougher night. I don't know if they were worried about fouls or what, but they weren't coming in and helping on some of these drives. And the post presence, something Michigan's been really good at all season, for the first time, really, it wasn't, they lost that battle. You know, Kofi Coburn. And Georgie Georgie B.
Bishanishvili.
I didn't have the pronunciation guide like you did. But he had a good game too. And so it really, you know, I think there was that stretch for about 10 minutes in the first half where Illinois was just playing out of its mind, you know, screaming out of its mind after every shot. And I think I think Michigan had one chance to kind of push it back into a game at the beginning of that second half. And then when Hunter Dickinson got that third foul, it was over, honestly. I mean, Illinois had all the energy, all the excitement, the momentum, and I think they had the game plan. I think, you know, Brad Underwood had a better game plan than Juwan Howard did for this particular matchup. And so throw it all together, that's how you lose by 30 points. You know, Illinois is a good team. Not every team can do that to Michigan, but you also have to look at Michigan's side and say, every player except maybe Eli Brooks had one of their worst games of the season. And that's where you start to wonder about the confidence, the motivation. If you're a Michigan fan, I can see where you're just a little bit worried with these two rivalry matchups coming up.
Very much so. And another number that really stuck out to me in the 76-53 drubbing from the fourth-ranked Fighting Illini that will for sure, in my opinion, they definitely will be a one seed come NCAA tournament time, was the fact that Michigan only had four assists on the 17 made field goals. And as you mentioned, the corner three wasn't open. The three off of ball screens weren't open. They couldn't do anything in the pick and roll action. I thought that Illinois defended that superbly. And because they defended it so well, you know, the guys guarding the wing in the corner never had to help. And if you never have to leave your man, well, then that man's not going to be open. And it was just a log jam in the middle. And I was perplexed by the way that game kind of shook out. And had you asked me, Zach Shaw, last week, yeah, what's Michigan and Michigan State, what's the outlook of that game going to be? And I would have said Michigan wins both games and they win both by a combined, you know, 2,000 points and everybody goes home happy. After what just happened on Tuesday, I am just shivering. I know that Ryan Elke in the studio, he's a state slappy, so he's rolling his eyes at me right now because I'm not trying to build in any sort of like false like confidence here. Like, I am legitimately nervous about tonight's ball game and then about Sunday's ball game against the Michigan State Spartans because, hey, look, Sparty's had some letdowns and they've been kind of all over the board all season long. But this is a team that won back to back in like a 3 or 4 day span against Illinois and against Ohio State. They had a letdown against Maryland. I think the one thing that works out well for Michigan is that Michigan State relying so heavily on Langford, relying so heavily, you know, on Aaron Henry and their core like starting five, that those guys are going to get tired because they've had to play so much in such a short period of time.
Yeah. I mean, I think the area where Michigan fans can be a little worried is, I mean, Izzo's really good at seeing blueprints and replicating it onto his team. And, you know, they have quick guards. You know, they might not have anyone that's Curbelo quick. I don't know about you, but when I was watching him, I'm like, what's the 40 time on that guy?
Holy hell, is he fast? I mean, there's quick and then there's fast. And there's a stark difference. Ask anybody who's played, you know, sports, like the difference between somebody who's fast and quick. Quick, I can get from point A to point B in a small like space, you know, very, very quickly, right? So that would be my definition of quick. Fast means I can run, you know, 100 feet real fast. He did both all over Michigan's guards. I'm like, yo, the pride of Puerto Rico here, Andre Curbelo, is just zigging and zagging all over this court. No one could stop him, and he was just smiling. That's the part that ate me alive, Zach. He was just giggling out there, and I was furious.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think players who, because I've covered the team for a few years, players who come in and look that fast, and Anthony Cowan's the only one I can think of who compares, and I don't even know if he would be Curbelo. But anyway, so Michigan State might not have anybody that fast, but they have guards who can keep up with Mike Smith, who's very, you know, quick and fast himself, on Eli Brooks, you know, two guys who could probably play a bunch of different sports, really. But Michigan State has guards that can match that. You know, they have wings that can at least hold their own, you know, thinking about like over the course of 50 games, you know, they'd win some matchups against Franz Wagner and Isaiah Livers. The big question I have is that, you know, a big part of what Illinois did was Kofi Coburn. I mean, his plus minus was exceptional. You know, and getting Dickinson in foul trouble clearly threw Michigan off mentally and physically just because he wasn't out there. And so that's the one part I'm a little curious about is does Michigan State have anyone that can match up with Hunter Dickinson? I mean, they have like a you know, rotating stable of big men, it seems like. And I like a lot of their games, but I don't know, you know, against the probably the Big Ten freshman of the year, 7'1", 260 pounder, you know, with skill. I'm curious about that matchup, but yeah, I think I understand why Michigan fans might be shaking in their boots because, I mean, they've kind of seen this movie before where Michigan's got a good team and, you know, Michigan State, they're usually ranked or pretty darn good themselves, but, you know, it's not a situation Michigan fans are comfortable with. Plus, you have to start wondering, I mean, they only made 2 3-pointers on Tuesday. Michigan State's pretty good at limiting threes, or at least limiting or contesting a lot of threes. There's not a lot of open looks against Michigan State. And so then if Michigan starts 0-for-5 from three, you know, does that self-doubt start to creep in? I think that's a big task for Juwan Howard on you know, less than 48 hours notice to basically convince his team to forget about a game that the entire country's talking about and play a new game and you know, kind of with try to regain some of that momentum when you don't have a real practice to go in and get your shots or work on some new plays. I mean, it's really what you've got is what you've got. And so that's where I get why people are a little wary of it. I mean, it certainly still looks like Michigan has, you know, if you go position by position or player by player, it seems like they kind of win the matchup still. But yeah, the way Michigan State's playing and the way Michigan looked on Tuesday, it's just now close enough to be dangerous for Michigan fans.
You know, Zach, you wrote about your five takeaways from that game, and yeah, one of them that I thought was good was Michigan's defense was closer than it appeared in the final score, and I thought that made total sense. Like, as you already mentioned in our conversation here today, just about Illinois hitting some really, really tough, really, you know, just difficult shots late in the shot clock and everything else. But one of the things, and you wrote about the inability for Michigan to get their shots, but what about the rebounding? Because it felt like, I mean, that game, and didn't even feel like it. Like, you look at the box score, I mean, they were out rebounded 42-26 in this ball game, and it just felt like every time there was a ball that a big man wasn't going to immediately get, Illinois had a guy that was right there for the basketball, and that to me was really concerning.
Yeah, and that's Illinois' game. I mean, they are fourth in the country, and well, now they're probably higher than fourth, but they're fourth in the country before Tuesday in rebounding margin. Michigan is 14th, though, so they were supposed to be kind of the same deal, and I think that's where I don't love the cliches about, like, oh, Michigan was complacent, or they were lethargic, or they didn't want it as bad as Illinois did, but I'd say rebounds and face-offs in hockey. I mean, those are two plays where a lot of it comes down to how much do you want to fight for it. You might want the ball, but, you know, against another team that's really good at rebounding, wanting the ball isn't enough. I mean, needing the ball has to be your mentality. And so that's, I mean, to get out-rebounded by 16, and granted, I do think Michigan took its, you know, foot off the gas with about 8 minutes left. I think they kind of understood, hey, this game's not going in our favor. But still, to get out-rebounded by 16, that's rare, period. They've only been out-rebounded once all season, and it was against Purdue, and they got out-rebounded by two. But in a game that was supposed to be, you know, kind of getting game of the year or Big Ten game of the year type hype, to just not even show up on the boards, really, that's where the cliches or the fan, I'd say the armchair opinions of, oh, Michigan didn't want it bad enough, that's where it gets a little bit of credence, because some of those balls, and I mean, you and I were both there, you could see, I mean, Michigan, if they needed that ball in their minds, they probably could have gotten it. And maybe they still get out rebounded, but probably not by 16. And if they aren't out rebounded by 16, I think the game's a little bit closer. I mean, Illinois scored 22 second chance points. Michigan scored 5. I mean, that's 17 points. If you even that out, suddenly the game looks a whole lot closer, especially, you know, before they put all the subs in.
Amen to that. Zach Shaw joining us. You can find him on Twitter @_ZachShaw. Find his work 24/7 sports. And Zach, because Michigan State, I mean, they're 14-10 overall, 8-10 in the conference against an 18-2 Wolverines team that's 13-2 in conference play. If Michigan doesn't sweep Michigan State, and I think that that's kind of a lot, because I think that no matter what happens tonight, Sunday's game is going to look a lot different than whatever happens later on this evening at Chrysler Center by the time they travel to the Breslin on Sunday. But if Michigan doesn't sweep Michigan State, does it put a damper on this season? Even though if they win one of the two games against Sparty, they go home with the Big Ten championship, does it kind of bring like a cloud over it at all?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think different fans will have different opinions, because I know some fans, they hate Michigan State. I mean, you know, they work maybe in the Metro Detroit area, and most of their office is Michigan State fans, or maybe their neighbor, or maybe someone in their family. I mean, you know, if Michigan wins the Big Ten but loses to Michigan State, and maybe it's like an ugly loss or a tough loss of some kind, you know, the Michigan State fans will talk about it, right? And they'll bring it up. And if Michigan, no matter what Michigan does the rest of the way, that loss will be there. It's kind of reminiscent of maybe 2018. Now, Michigan got the last laugh in 2018, but, you know, that Big Ten tournament. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Michigan won at Michigan State that year in 2018. Even though Michigan State won the Big Ten title, Michigan had a couple wins over the Spartans, and Michigan fans let Michigan State fans know. So, you know, every fan's going to have a different view of it. As a writer, as someone who kind of covers the history, or the, you know, kind of documents the history of this team, a banner's still a banner. I mean, if they win Thursday and you know, they're able to hang an outright Big Ten championship banner, just their second outright Big Ten title since 1986. I mean, they can't take that away. You know, Michigan State can win by 100 the next game, and they can't take that away. So I do think it would put a damper, and I'm sure some fans would be frustrated about it. But at the same time, if Michigan takes care of business tonight, then they're Big Ten champions. And there's nothing, to me, that trumps any, you know, in-state basketball rivalry. I mean, you know, they kind of go back and forth anyway. You know, it's not quite like football, where it's one game and then it's the whole year. You know, they play at least twice a year nowadays. And so there's going to be some back and forth, and even if the teams are up and down. But Big Ten title, that's 3 months of dominance. You can't, that's about as good as it gets. And that's something that I think Michigan fans should really cherish, is if they're able to win one, or Illinois loses and they can win the Big Ten title. That's a really, really, really impressive accomplishment, and a testament to you know, kind of what this team was able to put together when, at the beginning of the season, I don't think anybody was picking Michigan to win the Big Ten title.
No, I think that what the consensus was, a sixth place finish, and we'll kind of end on that note with the way that they were, you know, picked preseason. They weren't ranked preseason. They get all the way to number two before the disaster on Tuesday night. You know, at the end of the day, the job that Juwan Howard has done has been masterful. He's the coach of the year, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, if you're talking nationally, Alabama's had a pretty impressive season. I think Ohio State has exceeded expectations. Illinois has had a really good season. And Gonzaga, I think unfortunately what they've done is probably going to be watered down because of their conference play. But, you know, they have some really nice wins at the beginning of the year. But, you know, Juwan Howard, and I guess when I think about, like, why he should win, it's just the number of smart decisions he made. You know, there's a couple teams in the Big Ten that probably, looking back, wish they lost multi-year starters at point guard. They probably, looking back, wish they had gotten someone like Mike Smith in the transfer portal. You know, there's a few teams that, you know, maybe had a couple scholarship spots and didn't fill them. They're probably looking at what Shondi Brown's doing and thinking, man, find a you know, blue guy, an energy guy like that. So you know, bringing in two transfers, Hunter Dickinson, I mean, obviously he's a top 50 recruit, so not everyone can just say, oh, get that guy. But, you know, finding him, developing him, I think he's gotten a lot better throughout the season. And that's Juwan Howard. He's very hands-on with Hunter Dickinson. They have film sessions the night before games. He's taken a real personal ownership over Hunter Dickinson's game. And then just continuing the development of wings. It seems like every year they've got a couple guys. This year it's Isaiah Livers and Franz Wagner. And so they a lot of people didn't know what this Michigan team was going to look like. And you know, it's weird. Sounds weird saying it, because they just got shellacked at home. But it's almost a perfect team. I mean, it's really, you know, they have a weapon at every position. They have someone, I mean, they have like five blue guys. You know, everyone can step up in any given night. I think they've had six different players lead the team in scoring. And so it's really a special team. And I hope Michigan fans, I mean, at this point, they've got to be paying attention, right? But, you know, I hope they were able to watch and appreciate how this season unfolded, because I think the preparation was lights out. I think handling the layoff the way they did was really impressive. A lot of teams haven't been able to do it quite that well, you know, and then handling the day-to-day grind. Now, every team's doing the daily testing and kind of the quarantining, but I think Michigan, they've really embraced the opportunity that they have, you know, in that they didn't pout, they didn't complain, they didn't, you know, cut corners. I think they, you know, this was a team assembled by hard work from the coaches and the players. And so, you know, we'll see what happens the rest of the way. That's usually how teams get remembered. But so far, I don't think there are too many better stories in college basketball than Juwan Howard of Michigan basketball.
He is Zach Shaw. Find him on Twitter at underscore Zach Shaw. Find his work 24/7 Sports. Zach, my friend, thank you so much for the time today, my man. Let's catch up soon around tournament time.
Absolutely. I get to hear your voice one more time tonight at the game, right?
One more time. We'll see you at Chrysler.
Sounds good.